The noon position was latitude 72 degrees 2 minutes south, longitude 16 degrees 7 minutes west, and the run for the 24 hours had been 136 miles south 6 degrees east. We were now in the vicinity of the land discovered by Dr. W. S. Bruce, leader of the Scotia expedition in 1904, and named by him Coates Land. Dr. Bruce encountered an ice barrier in latitude 72 degrees 18 minutes south, longitude 10 degrees west, stretching from northeast to southwest. He followed the barrier edge to the southwest for 150 miles and reached latitude 74 degrees 1 minute south, longitude 22 degrees west. He saw no naked rock, but his description of rising slopes of snow and ice with shoaling water off the barrier wall indicated clearly the presence of land. It was up those slopes, at a point as far south as possible, that I had planned to begin the march across the Antarctic continent. All hands were watching now for the coast described by Dr. Bruce, and at 5 p.m. the lookout reported an appearance of land to the south-southeast. We could see a gentle snow slope rising to a height of about 1,000 feet. It seemed to be an island or a peninsula with a sound on its south side, and the position of its most northerly point was about 72 degrees 34 minutes south, 16 degrees 40 minutes west. The Endurance was passing through heavy, loose pack, and shortly before midnight she broke into a lead of open sea along a barrier edge. A sounding within one cable's length of the barrier edge gave no bottom with 210 fathoms of line. The barrier was 70 feet high, with cliffs of about 40 feet. The Scotia must have passed this point when pushing to Bruce's farthest south on March 6, 1904, and I knew from the narrative of that voyage, as well as from our own observation, that the coast trended away to the southwest. The lead of open water continued along the barrier edge, and we pushed forward without delay. An easterly breeze brought cloud and falls of snow during the morning of January 11th. The barrier trended southwest by south, and we skirted it for 50 miles until 11 a.m. The cliffs in the morning were 20 feet high, and by noon they had increased to 110 and 115 feet. The brow apparently rose 20 to 30 feet higher. We were forced away from the barrier once for 3 hours by a line of very heavy pack ice. Otherwise there was open water along the edge with high loose pack to the west and northwest. We noticed a seal bobbing up and down in an apparent effort to swallow a long silvery fish that projected at least 18 inches from its mouth. The noon position was latitude 73 degrees 13 minutes south, longitude 20 degrees 43 minutes west, and a sounding then gave 155 fathoms at a distance of a mile from the barrier. The bottom consisted of large igneous pebbles. The weather then became thick, and I held away to the westward, where the sky had given indications of open water, until 7 p.m., when we laid the ship alongside a floe in loose pack. Heavy snow was falling, and I was anxious lest the westerly wind should bring the pack hard against the coast and jam the ship. The Nimrod had a narrow escape from a misadventure of this kind in the Ross Sea early in 1908. We made a start again at 5 a.m. the next morning, January 12th, in overcast weather with mist and snow showers, and 4 hours later broke through loose pack ice into open water. The view was obscured, but we proceeded to the southeast and had gained 24 miles by noon, when three soundings in latitude 74 degrees 4 minutes south, longitude 22 degrees 48 minutes west, gave 95, 128, and 103 fathoms, with a bottom of sand, pebbles, and mud. Clark got a good haul of biological specimens in the dredge. The Endurance was now close to what appeared to be the barrier, with a heavy pack ice foot containing numerous bergs frozen in and possibly aground. The solid ice turned away towards the northwest, and we followed the edge for 48 miles north 60 degrees west to clear it. Now we were beyond the point reached by the Scotia, and the land underlying the ice sheet we were skirting was new. The northerly trend was unexpected, and I began to suspect that we were really rounding a huge ice tongue attached to the true barrier edge and extending northward. Events confirmed this suspicion. We skirted the pack all night, steering northwest, then went west by north till 4 a.m. and round to southwest. The course at 8 a.m. on the 13th was south-southwest. The barrier at midnight was low and distant, and at 8 a.m. there was merely a narrow ice foot about 200 yards across, separating it from the open water. By noon there was only an occasional shelf of ice foot. The barrier in one place came within an easy sweep to the sea. We could have landed stores there without difficulty. We made a sounding 400 feet off the barrier, but got no bottom at 676 fathoms. At 4 p.m., still following the barrier to the southwest, we reached a corner and found it receding abruptly to the southeast. Our way was blocked by very heavy pack, and after spending 2 hours in a vain search for an opening, we moored the Endurance to a floe and banked fires. During that day we passed 2 schools of seals, swimming fast to the northwest and north-northeast. The animals swam in close order, rising and blowing like porpoises, and we wondered if there was any significance in their journey northward at that time of the year. Several young emperor penguins had been captured and brought aboard on the previous day. 2 of them were still alive when the Endurance was brought alongside the floe. They promptly hopped onto the ice, turned round, bowed gracefully 3 times, and retired to the far side of the floe. There is something curiously human about the manners and movements of these birds. I was concerned about the dogs. They were losing condition, and some of them appeared to be ailing. 1 dog had to be shot on the 12th. We did not move the ship on the 14th. A breeze came from the east in the evening, and under its influence the pack began to work offshore. Before midnight, the close ice that had barred our way had opened and left a lane along the foot of the barrier. I decided to wait for the morning, not wishing to risk getting caught between the barrier and the pack in the event of the wind changing. A sounding gave 1,357 fathoms with a bottom of glacial mud. The noon observation showed the position to be latitude 74 degrees 9 minutes south, longitude 27 degrees 16 minutes west. We cast off at 6 a.m. on the 15th in hazy weather with a northeasterly breeze, and proceeded along the barrier in open water. The course was southeast for 16 miles, then south-southeast. We now had solid pack to windward, and at 3 p.m. we passed a bight probably 10 miles deep and running to the northeast. A similar bite appeared at 6 p.m. These deep cuts strengthened the impression we had already formed that for several days we had been rounding a great mass of ice at least 50 miles across, stretching out from the coast and possibly destined to float away at some time in the future. The soundings, roughly 200 fathoms at the landward side and 1,300 fathoms at the seaward side, suggested that this mighty projection was afloat. Seals were plentiful. We saw large numbers on the pack and several on low parts of the barrier, where the slope was easy. The ship passed through large schools of seals swimming from the barrier to the pack offshore. The animals were splashing and blowing around the Endurance, and Hurley made a record of this unusual sight with the kinematograph camera. The barrier now stretched to the southwest again. Sail was set to a fresh easterly breeze, but at 7 p.m. it had to be furled, the Endurance being held up by pack ice against the barrier for an hour. We took advantage of the pause to sound and got 268 fathoms with glacial mud and pebbles. Then a small lane appeared ahead. We pushed through at full speed, and by 8:30 p.m. the Endurance was moving southward with sail set in a fine expanse of open water. We continued to skirt the barrier in clear weather. I was watching for possible landing places, though, as a matter of fact, I had no intention of landing north of Vassal Bay, in Luitpold Land, except under pressure of necessity. Every mile gained towards the south meant a mile less sledging when the time came for the overland journey. Shortly before midnight on the 15th, we came abreast of the northern edge of a great glacier or overflow from the inland ice, projecting beyond the barrier into the sea. It was 400 or 500 feet high, and at its edge was a large mass of thick bay ice. The bay formed by the northern edge of this glacier would have made an excellent landing place. A flat ice foot nearly 3 feet above sea level looked like a natural quay. From this ice foot, a snow slope rose to the top of the barrier. The bay was protected from the southeasterly wind and was open only to the northerly wind, which is rare in those latitudes. A sounding gave 80 fathoms, indicating that the glacier was aground. I named the place Glacier Bay, and had reason later to remember it with regret. The Endurance steamed along the front of this ice floe for about 17 miles. The glacier showed huge crevasses and high-pressure ridges, and appeared to run back to ice-covered slopes or hills 1,000 or 2,000 feet high. Some bays in its front were filled with smooth ice, dotted with seals and penguins. At 4 a.m. on the 16th, we reached the edge of another huge glacial overflow from the ice sheet. The ice appeared to be coming over low hills and was heavily broken. The cliff face was 250 to 350 feet high, and the ice surface 2 miles inland was probably 2,000 feet high.